Welcome to the Logic Gate podcast, where we discuss the Star Wars series Andor on Disney Plus. I am your current host, Jason, and I'm joined by my two friends, Doug.
Hello.
And Scott.
Hola.
In this episode, we're going to discuss the series as a whole and go into some of our favorite and maybe not so favorite things about Andor, as well as some speculation about the upcoming season two. We'll end with our overall thoughts and ratings on the show. This may be a quicker episode, as we're not recapping a whole episode, so we'll see how it goes.
You really think this is going to be shorter?
About that.
I don't know.
We'll see.
It's new territory, so we'll see. I did want to go into, I have like a few articles and YouTube reviews that I've collected about Andor, just to lead into the first question. So some articles from Star Wars News Net. Andor struggles with ratings and audience demand. Where is Andor's massive audience? From IndieWire. It says, blame Disney for too many bad Star Wars stories. Tony Gilroy says his Disney Plus series is still chasing an audience. One reason may be that casual fans are burnt out after years of franchise disappointments. Star Wars, why Andor had overwhelmingly low performance despite positive reviews. And after its fourth week of release, it barely made the top 10 of digital originals. Was nowhere near the overall top 10 ever. Analyst from Parrot Analytics, Brandon Katz, shared disappointing statistics about this series. The stats showed that there's diminishing demand for Andor than other Star Wars releases on Disney+. The most disappointing trend I've come across recently is how audience demand for Andor is overwhelmingly low than The Mandalorian Season 1 and 2, The Book of Boba Fett, and Obi-Wan Kenobi, despite the fact that's easily the best Star Wars series by far. I mean, that's a quote from him.
I agree with him.
Some fan reviews on YouTube, some fans. Andor is a boring disappointment, from Dark Dream Productions. A quote from that, I think it's, yeah, he says, I don't mind a slower pace to things, but the first two episodes seem to me to be padded out with scenes that went on too long. From the video, Andor is the most boring Star Wars has ever been, from World of Geekdom.
Yeah, I disagree with that guy.
75,000 subscribers on YouTube. See, let's hear. This show might look good. The actors might be good, but the story is as mundane as they come. From this is not Star Wars! Exclamation point video from Robot Head. With this is somebody who has 338,000 subscribers.
How many subscribers do we have? Are we up to three?
We're three.
Like 2,500.
Yeah, I could go. Actually, my cousins are into this now. I went, you know, over the Christmas break, we had a family party, and I realized a couple of my family's, you know, members are into this, and they, because of the podcast, they binge the show. So
excellent.
We've got growing, you know,
it's a growing fan base.
I just need more family members.
there you go. Can you have a couple more kids?
So another one, not even filler, visual sludge, from the video, YouTube video, boring exclamation point, Star Wars Andor episodes 1, 2, 3 review video from Night's Watch, which has 100,000 subscribers. Quote, there is a lot of articles saying this is what Star Wars needs to be. This is the best Star Wars we've had. What the F are you guys smoking? is Andor good or bad, from Star Wars video from us? This is a video that had 100,000 views. Yeah, it's a good show, but is it a good Star Wars show? I actually think it's hurting the brand. Although I found the world building very good, I was rather bored with the storyline. It just kind of drags from episode to episode. Watching some guy having dinner with his mom and other spellbinding scenes is not what I expected to see in a Star Wars show. Hopefully they'll do better next series. John Rodriguez. Okay, so
no love for Cyril's mom, huh?
So basically, to lead into, I think that basically there's a segment of Star Wars fandom, however big or small it is, it just didn't catch on. So it's like pretty critically acclaimed, but Andor has had low ratings compared to The Mandalorian, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and The Book of Boba Fett. Why do you think Andor hasn't been as popular and well-received with the general Star Wars fan base?
Well, I, I want to just super quick. I usually base my, you know, there's a lot of shows out there. We're sort of in the golden age of television. So I kind of rely pretty heavily on Metacritic for whether or not I tune into a show, you know, whether or not it's legitimately good or if it's, you know, I feel like a lot of those quotes maybe, or a lot of those articles were maybe clickbaity because the show did have very critically, it had very high marks. So part of me wonders if some of those headlines were just clickbait to get people to come in and read about why the show is terrible, even though it has really good reviews. That said, looking at Metacritic right now, it has a 74 score from critics, and it has an 83 score from just regular users. And that is an insanely high score. So I think
is that good? 74% for the critics? I guess that's the critic review.
I usually honestly ignore the critics, and I usually go with the user base unless it's, you know, something that gets review bombed.
Oh,
but okay. I mean, 83 for user score is insanely high, and I think it's pretty safe to summarize that we all really really liked the show. So just circle back to the question: why wasn't Andor as popular, well received as the general as other Star Wars shows? This is a totally different show. This is not necessarily a Star Wars show. This is like a political intrigue show set in the Star Wars universe. There's no lightsabers. There's no Jedi. There's no Ewoks. There's no Sith, right? In fact, there's very few, like even spaceships, right? Those are the defining characteristics of what, in my mind, makes a Star Wars movie. So when you don't have a lot of those elements, I think maybe it's off-putting to some people. The other thing, just real quick, and then I'll wrap up, is I don't feel like Andor is a kid show. Like, I would not show this to my 13-year-old. I think he would be bored with it. Mm-hmm. Versus something like The Mandalorian, they're super into because, you know, all the lightsabers and the, you know, there's a lot more action. I feel like maybe this is grown-up Star Wars. So I think maybe that's made the difference. I mean, ultimately, the Star Wars movies, all nine of them, they're kids' movies, dude. They're all rated PG, PG-13. They've all got, you know, all the elements that kids are into. So I feel like maybe this was purposely trying to hit a different audience.
I can definitely get on board with that second part there, because I found myself reflecting on that as we were going through the series. Mandalorian, I had a great time watching with my both of my sons, actually. The older one was into the whole, you know, action sequences and stuff. And my younger son, he loved Yoda, but Grogu, Baby Yoda. Yeah, Grogu.
It's curse you for even calling him Baby Yoda, because, like, I got so much shit for that. So you got to know his name, right, Doug?
His name, but let's be honest. Like, they know what they were doing. It was Yoda as a baby. They knew what they were doing.
Yeah,
I get that it's a brand new character and stuff, but come on now. But the point is, like, this show really didn't have anything to offer for my kids. Like, my older son, he tried to sit through a couple episodes, and some of the stuff he was into, but a lot of the really slow dialogue-driven scenes, he kind of just didn't care about.
Yeah, yeah. How old is your son? Michael,
13.
Right? 13. Yeah, that's. Yeah. I mean, that is prime age for, like, Star Wars generalized content. I think this show is definitely not like a four quadrant show. It's not going to hit all. So that it's already kind of slow off the gate, I think. But maybe I can explore why that is more with my thoughts. I think Cassian is like as a character, he's a very much an anti-hero. He's kind of an anti-superhero, whereas a lot of what Star Wars is about, you know, some powerful or special hero. You know, even Boba Fett, Luke Skywalker, Obi-Wan. It's about somebody who is extraordinary, and you know, and that's kind of what almost just a lot of popular media is these days. And this show is about thoroughly regular people and, like, sacrifices and pain that happens with a rebellion or a revolution. Like, Luthen, he seems to be sacrificing his morality and his almost sanity. Mon Mothma is sacrificing her family And Cassian seems to sacrifices everything like monthly. It seems, you know, he just moves on from place to place. And so it's not like the most accessible or friendly angle in that respect. It's pretty dark. So
didn't we talk about how like this show, I mean, you look at Star Wars, like the original trilogy, you have Darth Vader, he's very clearly the bad guy and he's dressed all in black, and you have, you know, you have Obi-Wan, who's very clearly the good guy and he's dressed all in white. It's a very easily accessible for kids. It's a good versus evil show or movie. But Andor, the entire thing is about all the gray areas in between. I think that's what makes it interesting, but perhaps that also makes it not as approachable for kids who maybe need it a little more simplified.
But I would also point out that every point that you're making about this show and how it differs from the typical Star Wars, same thing with Rogue One. This show isn't really going any groundbreaking places that Rogue One didn't. There wasn't a superhero in Rogue One. It was just regular people making huge sacrifices. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I'm just saying that's not completely unique to the series Andor.
But there's one difference between Rogue One. I mean, this show is good, and then Rogue One is not good. So there's a little slight difference, but yeah. I think it's just themes are not the mainstream themes of like a hero person. It's kind of about, you know, there's really good characters in this show, but it's not really about like a specific character or hero. It's about kind of like the natural formulation of these rebellious groups in the face of imperial regime, you know, this growing threat. So it's about these concepts, you know, ultimately. So it's just not like kind of what fits in the normal mainstream stuff.
Do you think that this show was affected by the poor showing of some of the other Star Wars shows? Like, I tried watching Book of Boba Fett and I just couldn't do it after 2.5 episodes. And I didn't even bother to try and watch Kenobi because the clips I saw online just made it look silly and laughable. And neither one of those had particularly great, you know, reviews. So
yeah. Yeah, but they had better ratings, it seems.
Did they? I mean, Mandalorian, I mean, you can't go wrong with that show. There's action. It's just amazing start to finish. And it's accessible, right? I mean, that is a kid's show, kind of. So I think that's probably more accessible. Do you think like people were just like, oh man, I just got done watching that Kenobi show and it was a stinker, so I'm not going to tune in?
I don't know. I mean, I think the simple answer is that it's called Andor and it's about like a not so interesting character, like not even the main character from, a spinoff movie. So it's like a spinoff character from a spinoff movie from one line in New Hope, you know? So whereas like Boba Fett, even though the show just like kind of was apparently pretty bad, I didn't watch it, but it had really bad reviews, it still has a very popular character. I mean, I think that's maybe the simple answer, but
if I look at Metacritic real quick, the Obi-Wan show has a 65 user score and the Book of Boba Fett has a 53 user score. So those are, not great, not compared to, you know, the 83 that Andor got. So
let me just throw out a confirmation of your theory, because yes, I was totally going to give Andor a miss based on my sort of falling interest. Mandalorian was fantastic. Book of Boba Fett kind of let me down. Just like you, I saw a bunch of the reviews for Obi-Wan and kind of steered clear of it. I didn't want to be let down again. I wasn't going to watch Andor until you guys decided to try and do the podcast. And okay, I'll give it a whirl. Worst case scenario, I just make fun of it every week. But it turned out being pretty good.
I mean, I think because we're, and I've said this to you guys before, but I mean, because we're in essentially whatever the golden era of TV, I mean, there are so many good shows there. I mean, my to watch list is, you know, so many shows deep. Like if a show is not great, I'm not watching it because there's so many great shows to be watched. So, I mean, if there's a show out there that's just kind of mediocre and, you know, maybe it's in a genre I would like, I'm probably going to give it a pass.
100% agree. It either needs to be like award-winning, some of the best entertainment of all time, or I'm just going to watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine again.
Yeah, I mentioned it before. I said, you know, but I didn't. I was like actively against the show. I was kind of angry that but you know, because I don't like Rogue One. I did not like Cassian's character from that specifically. I thought he was so boring, and like a series about him like was just last on my list of things until I heard kind of insider information. I heard who was writing, directing it. I heard like some critics had early access to the first three, like critics I really trust, like saying this is like an amazing thing. So yeah, if people aren't privy to that kind of stuff, then yeah, it's gonna lose the it's gonna lose a lot of word of mouth, I guess, or just like initial marketing push. It's not gonna have that. So
I think I probably was going to give this show a pass until you convinced me to give it a shot, because he talked about Tony Gilroy and his pedigree in Hollywood. So this wasn't particularly on my radar, because, again, like you said, it's a spinoff of a spinoff, man. Like, nobody out there was clamoring for a Cassian show, right? I mean, there was no hardcore fans that were like, man, this guy's great. He should get his own show, right? So
yeah, absolutely no one was asking for this, for sure. So I guess that kind of leads into my next overall category of like, where does this take us into Star Wars? What does Andor mean for Star Wars? In an interview with the LA Times, Tony was asked, how does this story fit into the greater universe of Star Wars? Is Luthen putting together the first organized rebellion? He says, I'm really confident there are all kinds of rebellions happening all over the place. One of the things that was important that we got into Nemec's monologue that he has in the manifesto, he's talking about the fact that the revolution is natural. This galaxy is enormous, and there are all kinds of factions, probably some of them working side by side and not even knowing that they're together, that you're going to see over the next 4 years. That's one of the great tensions. How do all these groups come together? There's a speech early on that Forrest Whitaker gives when he's challenging Luthen. He says, they're separatists, human cultists, all these different people.
Riggers, a separatist. Maipes, a neo-republican. The Gorman Front. The Partisan Alliance. Sectorists, human cultists, galaxy partitionists. They're lost. All of them, lost. Lost. What are you, Luthen?
My God, you can pick a lot of different revolutions, but just look at the Russian Revolution, look at the factions in 1916 that are going to go at it. So I'm curious, so do you think Andor is going to have an impact on Star Wars content moving forward, or do you think it's a flash in the pan?
I don't think it's a flash in the pan. I don't know if it's going to have the cultural impact on the Star Wars franchise. I guess that will remain to be seen what happens in season two and if they can pick up the ratings that they need. I'm really hoping that this, you know, upticks the Tony Gilroy stock in Hollywood, because I will go wherever that guy goes. Yeah, this show is amazing. The storytelling and the way that they told the story in the three episode arcs, where you get these, you know, a couple slow burn episodes and then a big payoff, and then I hope that a bunch of people copy that. I would love to see that used in other shows, in other genres. I would love to see Tony Gilroy tackle some other established property. I mean, if you can go into Star Wars, which is essentially the biggest fandom, you know, ever, you know, imagine if he got a Lord of the Rings or a Stephen King or something, right? I think there's something to be said. Clearly, he's really good at storytelling. I would like to see this trickle out beyond just Star Wars. I don't know if it's going to have a particular impact on the Star Wars fan base, just because, you know, what we talked about before is that it didn't get the audience that it wanted.
Yeah, what do you think, Doug? Yeah,
I think it comes down to money. I mean, I hate to be so cynical about it, but Star Wars as a franchise is supposed to make money. It can be critically acclaimed, but maybe there's a niche market for it that Disney decides to invest in. I think they'll follow through with season two, just because, you know, that's already in the planning.
Well, yeah, they're already filming. It's, you know, it's like, yeah. But with the change in leadership at Disney too, to Bob Iger ousting, I can't, Chapek or something, the guy before, they had been really floundering, Disney as a whole. So you really wonder what's going to happen with these weird shows. Yeah.
Yes, floundering is, you have to keep that in context. Floundering while still making, you know, well in the black profits. Is that really floundering?
Yeah, that's maybe not the right word. I guess it had a lot of bombs, like Lightyear was a big bomb. Even this recent one, Strange World, was a big bomb. And then they put like good stuff on streaming, like the Panda one, Turning Red. They've been really bombing in like theaters. So I think that's part of why they had leadership change. But yeah.
Also, been a lot of negative press about the parks, negative reviews and stuff to new attractions and things at the Disney parks. I think that also weighed heavily on bringing back. But we're not here tonight to discuss politics of the Disney front office. The general question, though, what is this show going to have as an impact, I think is just that. It showed that there is a market for Star Wars snobs like us, who want a well thought out, well written story, and can deal with some adult type pacing as that stuff is set up. It doesn't have to be all Michael Bay explosions and lightsabers. But ultimately, they're going to go where the money is, and that niche market isn't going to pull in the best revenue for them. So I don't know that this will really impact the franchise as a whole, but maybe if we're lucky, we continue to get some more adult themed Star Wars stuff.
Are you guys telling any of your friends and family to go tune into Kenobi or go tune into Book of Boba Fett?
I did. Well, not Kenobi, but yeah.
I mean, I told everybody that, I mean, granted, we were doing a podcast, but I was telling everybody, I'm like, holy crap, man, this Andor show, this is like nothing I've ever seen. Like, I've been, you know, out there, you know, at least doing some buzz marketing for them. I mean, this show got me excited. So, I mean, I was trying to get in more audience for it and let people know that, you know, this is, again, this is grown up Star Wars. So it's very rare that I'm going out of my way beyond, you know, my close circle of friends and being like, hey, go check out this show. There was definitely something special about this show. I don't know. I wonder if we're going to look back on this in 5 years and realize that maybe this show kind of started a new format or a new genre, because it just feels like this show is so different than everything we've really seen before.
Well, I don't think it's that different. It's just different in Star Wars. And I think it's important. And I don't think that's like a bad thing. I just think seeing something this competent and this high quality in the Star Wars universe is novel. So I'm kind of two minds. I think that it may have a negative effect, and Disney may learn the wrong lessons from this. But you also have the artistry side of it, and you have people in the industry that look at this type of thing, and they see the quality, and they see the potential there. The lights come on and they say, oh, dude, you did a heist like arc in Star Wars. Oh, you did like, you know, a prison break in Star Wars. Tony Gilroy did some amazing writing and work. So you have the insider, you know, maybe the industry. This is the other side of my hope is that, you know, it's going to get the ball rolling for some like inventive and artistic avenues in Star Wars. Other artists, directors, writers will see it and get inspired to explore new ideas. Like, but they have the rich lore and the solid fan base to back it up too. To get to play in this world, it kind of reminds me of like Magic the Gathering a little bit, where, you know, the designers and developers and that kind of enjoy the constraints that they have in Magic, so they can explore really interesting worlds, but they have these certain restrictions, and they have a lot of rich history to the game. So it really gives them some stuff to work with and inspiration. So I'm hoping like the art side of it, the industry side of it will take note and that will grow. But the money, you're right, the money side of it doesn't look that good.
I agree.
Okay. Well.
Well, okay. So the money side of it hasn't done that good, right? I mean, I think nobody's really contesting that part of it. I'm curious what the actual numbers are, like as far as how much they invested into shooting the show versus what they made on a return. Those numbers are really hard to judge, though, with the streaming service, because you're not getting revenue specifically for that project.
It's really hard to know. They don't release specific numbers. I think people look at like social media activity and like just basically online searches and certain analytics like that, but there's no numbers released from Disney, so it's hard to say.
So in terms of like low numbers, theoretical low numbers, what do you think the series has lacked or could have done better so far?
Well, it could have had more popularity and people liking it. That's one thing.
But why wasn't it as popular? Yeah. Why didn't people like it? What was lacking, I guess, is what I'm trying to segue to, because that's your third question in the list.
Well, I think I want to answer this personally. I think what I really think it could have done better is had more alien stuff, I think. It did seem kind of human-centric, and I think that's just kind of where Tony Gilroy's comfort zone is. Like, it's hard to work, and also maybe budget, but I would have liked to have seen more weird alien cultures and having those play in a little bit more. So that's one thing I would have liked to have seen. I don't know. What about you guys?
I don't hate what you're saying, but, like, think about Disney and their track record with portrayal of aliens. Think about the Gungans from Phantom Menace. They get a little bit racist. Just a little bit. It's not a good track record.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say I don't think the series lacked anything. From my point of view, there was never a point during the show where I'm like, oh, man, this is kind of eh. I wish they would have done blah. Like, Tony Gilroy knocked it out of the park. Like, this show is fantastic. Now, why it perhaps didn't resonate with a larger audience, I don't know. I mean, that's up to Disney and their focus groups and whoever. I don't want them to do anything different with this show. I mean, the logical choice, you know, it seems like maybe you could have, you know, like you said, throw some aliens, throw some lightsabers, throw some, you know, some fan favorites in it. But I think that would have taken away from it. I don't want to see Obi-Wan show up in this. I don't want to see the Millennium Falcon, right? Like, I was super happy with what it was, because we've seen all those stories and we've seen all those characters. I was happy to play with new characters in a new world. So I think this show was perfect.
Well, okay, I'm with you. But I'm not saying, like, throw in aliens that we know. I just, like, maybe sprinkle a little Star Trek in there. You know what I'm saying? Like, throw some weird alien cultures that we haven't seen before and that play with what's going on in the story in an interesting way that's, you know, Star Trek does so well. That's why I say it was just lacking, because there wasn't a lot of alien creatures. There was very few. It was mostly humans that we were, you know, following through the show. So it just felt a little weird in a Star Wars, but ultimately I think the show was fairly perfect.
First of all, just addressing the it was perfect. No, it wasn't. I mean, I appreciate your opinion on that. It's wrong, but it was good. It was really good, right?
Well, it wasn't. Okay, obviously I didn't give every episode a 10 out of 10. Okay, perfect is the wrong word, sure.
But for me, anyway, personally, for me, I would have liked to have seen a heavier droid presence and, like, more characterization of the droids, like emotional characterization. I think their droids came across a little stilted at times, and it would have been nice to give them more personality, you know?
Yep.
Oh, Jason, he softballed that one to you, man.
I want more droid emotions.
Yes, that's
this show lacked human emotions in droids, and I wanted more of it.
Yeah, that's true. It did. It was It was pretty light on the droid emotions.
It needs some more C-3PO slapstick comedy. It needs some more K2SO badassery, right?
Okay. So you want to get into the nitpicky parts. Yes, that was like a pretty bad. And I think you guys kind of agree that like it went a little cringe with the droid character. But we can get into like overall, like, you know, negative aspects of it. You know, what it lacked is nothing, because it was pretty good. So let's go to our next question, subject/subject. Most surprising, underwhelming character of the show. What do you guys want to answer for that one?
The most surprising, the character I was not expecting to like or to be so influential, has to be Cyril's mom. Because she plays like such a small part in the show, really. Like, she doesn't really advance any of the plot, but every time she is on screen, it's just, I want to say comedy gold, but it's not necessarily comedy. It's just, she's just such a wacky character. The way she has Cyril wrapped around her finger is just fantastic.
Yeah.
So that would be my vote for most surprising. I mean, the most underwhelming character probably would be the droid. I wanted a little bit more from them. I mean, I think we kind of all said that. Like, we kind of expected him to have some big reveal at the end that he's been working with Marva to do the rebellion or something. So if they had given him a little bit better of a closing story, perhaps that I would have been happier. But those are my two votes.
Yeah, that's fair. Doug, is there any character that you were like surprised by, or just underwhelmed, or that kind of stood out to you?
Well, I guess looking at both ends of the spectrum, there the positive and the negative. On the positive side, I really loved the character of Luthen, not just because Stellan Skarsgård did an amazing job, but I loved the complexity of an anti-hero. You know, he was something I don't think we've really seen before in Star Wars. A leader, a hero, but with some serious flaws, some serious issues.
Yeah. And,
you know, you get to see him doing some kind of dirty stuff at times, getting his hands dirty, doing things that are not good. You know, when he refuses to let that informant out because, oh, he's got a kid, he was like, nah, no, you're more important to me than that kid. So that was a little bit brutal. We've never really seen a character like that we've been supposed to root for, right?
He let that separatist, you know, and 30 of his men go to their deaths, right? I mean, that's dark.
Yeah. So I was intrigued by the character of Luthen. I was surprised by that. I wasn't expecting to have so much interest in someone who wasn't Cassian in this series. So he's definitely my top on the positive. On the negative, the two characters that I think I really found myself kind of hating by the end of the season, the droid B2. What a worthless little pile of bolts. I mean, what the hell does B... Why was B2 in that? What the hell was the point?
I'm hoping he gets like a redemption arc in season 2. There was some things online in the Andor subreddit and a couple places were perhaps hypothesizing that B2MO's consciousness or his programming, whatever, gets transferred into K2SO somehow, and that's why K2SO is such good friends with Cass. I mean, we won't know till we see it, but that's kind of what I'm hoping for, is that B2 gets he gets to make up for his flaws in season 1.
I would hope that they do something else with that character, because where it is right now is just a complete waste of screen time. The other one would be Fel. A lot of bark, no bite, chip on her shoulder, rich girl, thinks she's a rebel. Like, I don't know, not an uninteresting character, but just one that I really... by the end of the series, just, I don't care.
All right, Jason, what about you?
Yeah. I mean, Vel, I would have liked to seen more of Vel. It seemed like there were scenes cut out, honestly, with Vel. there was a lot of storylines in the show that he was juggling. It's very possible that there was entire sections or chunks that were removed. It really feels like that with Vel.
Yeah, that's a fair observation. I feel like there could have been a couple of scenes missing that might have explained her more. But anyway.
Yeah. I would say the one that I want to shout out is Mon Mothma. I think in a good way. I was not super jazzed to learn more about Star Wars politics. I had been burned a little bit, you know, in previous incarnations of Star Wars politics. And like a, you know, kind of a bougie kind of politician that, you know, the character I had no interest in initially. And it didn't, she's not really connected to our main character very closely at all. So I was surprised at how interested I was in that section of the show and in Mon Mothma's whole storyline, her and her family, the cold tension there, the interesting sacrifice that she's making, the inner workings of a rebellious senator in that position, I found to be really compelling by the end. So I was really surprised. Another one I do want to shout out is Daedra. Also, I think she probably is my favorite character of the whole show. Like, so perfect of a what you think an Empire commander is, you know, sunken eyes, looks like they're losing sleep every day. And initially it was really interesting because initially you were kind of rooting for her, like she was kind of the underdog in her, you know, corporate environment. People were kind of like looking down on her, and she was like the go-getter, you know, but she ultimately became like the true dark fascist and like really evil. So I was really I really enjoyed that turn of events of like how I felt about a character.
Yeah, I was not rooting for her at the beginning. I mean, like, clearly she's a bad guy, and I was like, oh, you know, she's just kind of this boring bureaucrat. But like you said, like halfway through, like she gets really interesting, even in a dark bad guy kind of way. Like, just the character was so fascinating. Like, yeah, there were a couple scenes where I'm like kind of actually rooting for her just because she's so compelling.
Yeah, I really enjoyed her. And she's a really good actress. And the way she's like reacting to Karn and his like stalker behavior,
as uncomfortable as it is, their time on screen together is just gold. It's so cringy, but it's so perfect.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's something I haven't really seen before. Honestly, I don't think I've seen something like quite like that. That chemistry, that interaction. So, and it can only be born from this situation of the like, this person is so tied into the Empire. Daedra, she's living her life in this crazy structure of the Empire. Her life is consumed by this. So, what is a relationship? What is like something that? What does a friendly relationship look like in that situation? How does this even like come about? Where you have some dude that like encounters her and like becomes infatuated, and the tension there is so interesting because it's backed by this Empire storyline that we know all about. So I think that's what's so unique about this kind of thing in these characters. So yeah, I just loved it, and I want to emphasize that the Star Wars component is really important. I could watch a good show about this all day long, but I think the Star Wars component really adds something to this. And I think that's what's important about this show, or what's left an impression about the show on me, is that I'm actually really interested in seeing more of Star Wars. Like, it's been a long time since I've ever wanted to know more about Star Wars. This show has a good structure, but not only a good structure, it has that whole, all of what we know about Star Wars really boosting it and like adding another layer to it, which is anyway, so I could go on forever about that.
Please, please do go on. Okay. You say you want to know more about Star Wars. What are you looking forward to in the next season? What might you be slightly worried about in the next season?
Okay. Well,
All right, hey, so yeah, Doug is joking because we have a list of questions, and that's the next question. Before we move on to that, I hate to ruin your segue. I want to throw a major shout out to Kino, and because that character, I had zero expectations for that character, and he was amazing as well. Like, I seeing the intensity that Andy Serkis brought to.
We know they fried 100 men. From level 2. We know that they are making up our sentences as we go along. We know that no one outside here knows what's happening. And now we know that when they say we are being released, we are being transferred to some other prison to go and die. And that ends today. There is one.
Which, for all intents and purposes, is really a throwaway character. He's only in 3 episodes, and he doesn't... I mean, I guess we don't know yet. He doesn't come back later, we don't think. So I was super impressed and super invested in Kino Loy's story. So,
yeah, that was definitely an amazing standout character. And absolutely. To see him play just kind of an actor rather than someone who's motion capturing, which he's kind of known for. He did amazing as the kind of reluctant leader. So much going on. Yeah, I mean, it was awesome. So
super intense, super believable. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Now I'll segue very poorly into our next question, which is, what are you looking forward to, worried about in the new season? So we know that there is a new season. We know that they're only going to do 2 seasons of this. So whatever we're going to get in next season, they're doing 12 episodes again. Is that right?
Yes. So here's from an interview with the LA Times. They ask, you're just starting production on season 2. We know where Cassian's story eventually ends, but can you give us a tease of what to expect in the next season? He says, we spent a whole year, all of our first 12 episodes, going through everything, the complete radicalization, eye-opening, Stations of the Cross to becoming a revolutionary. That commitment won't waver. That question has been answered. But now, how do you become a leader? How do all these different players possibly learn to work with each other? What do you do when paranoia is your product and you have to collaborate? Those issues will be huge. We're going to examine the effects of time on these people, the movement forward, and the Empire is only going to get stronger, as you know. So that kind of gives you a taste of what he's thinking for the upcoming season. Doug, I'm going to flip it around, giving that context. What do you think about the new season? What do you worry about? What do you want to see?
I think the thing I'm most worried about is Disney. I'm worried that they won't let the show be what it is. I'm worried they're going to do like some stuff like, oh no. And then somehow the Emperor is involved or something like that.
They got to fit another cute droid in there, right?
Yeah. Another cute droid. I'd be okay with that as long as it emotes humanly enough. but no, I'm afraid that they looked at the numbers for season 1 and kind of came down with their own directives of you got to have more lightsabers in it, or you know, there has to be some Jedi or some Sith, or you know,
Millennium Falcon flies in and saves the day.
Exactly. CGI Luke Skywalker shows up in the last episode and like, oh come on. I want to let the show be what it is.
That was not on my radar, but now that you say that, I think that is a totally feasible thing, is that they try and correct the course in season 2 and get notes from the studio. And yeah, okay, now you got me worried.
That would be the cringiest thing, to like have the show class or kind of try to fit in with the existing kind of Disney Plus TV cinematic universe, you know, like, because they've kind of been trying to do that with, from what I understand, that like Boba Fett has mixed with Mandalorian. I mean, Obi-Wan, I guess, is its own thing, but it's been interacting with the mainline stuff a lot. So having that directive, I think, is realistic. It's possible. I think they just started production the end of this year. it may be, you know, too late for any of that influence to come in. But we'll see. Yeah. I don't have a lot that I really am wanting to see. I just want to see, what Tony is talking about here with all of these elements coming together and watching this, this rebellion movement coalesce. I mean, I think that's got to be what the season's about, and hopefully it's not tarnished by anything else, but I'm really curious. I'm a little worried about the structure that he's specifically talked about, where the next season is actually going to take place over 4 years. Every three episodes is going to be a year. So I'm a little worried that we're not going to be able to live in a storyline for very long. We're just going to have, three episodes where is a year. And so we got a whole cram a whole bunch of stuff into one three episode chunk, and then it's going to feel a little bit jumpy. So that's kind of what I'm worried about. But so far, I guess we'll see about that. So I don't know.
I'm kind of on the opposite side of that. So just to clarify, there's going to be 12 episodes in the next season, and each three episodes are going to be a year. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yep.
So we're going to see a lot of short stories and then a big jump in time. I'm really looking forward to that, because I think it's an interesting way to tell a story. Just like we did the three story arcs, or the three show arcs in this season, and that worked out really well. I think if you add in a component of the time advancing as well, because we know where the story ends, so we know where we're going to go. So if they can make the time jump work, and I have faith that if anybody could, Tony can, I think that'll be an interesting way to tell a story. So I'm looking forward to that. So we'll see when that comes out. The thing I would be most worried about in the new season, I think it's kind of universally agreed upon, at least between the three of us and most of Reddit, is that they're going to have to kill Luthen, because Luthen certainly doesn't factor in anywhere in Rogue One, and certainly not in the original trilogy. So he has to fade away into the background somewhere. And he's such a compelling character. I mean, we said in the past that he's a great character and he should get his own spinoff show. I would be totally on board with that. So I'm worried that they're gonna get rid of Luthen, and I'm not gonna like it. I mean, I don't really see how you can get rid of a character that with that much gravitas, that much I don't know what the word is, that much likability in a satisfying way, where he's, going to get killed in a lightsaber battle or whatever. And I'm going to go, okay. I think Eddie, with any way that he gets retired, I'm going to be frustrated that he doesn't get to continue on doing whatever crazy things he does.
Well, I think they've kind of telegraphed, his demise.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be, I have no lack of faith that it's going to be really interesting. Whether his personal legacy will be, tarnished. Obviously in the show, he doesn't have much personal legacy, but in the show, I think his character is going to see an interesting end, I think. But I want to go back to what you said about the jumps and stuff. And I think it's interesting how, so modern TV, and we're in the golden age of TV, where TV has seen a lot of really great artists and actors and writers because of the depth that you can achieve in a long running series, even like an 8-episode thing versus a movie. You can have a thread go for a longer amount of time than a movie. And you can explore things and go really deep, and that's kind of attractive. But also, I think it's been a little played out. I think people have seen where it has gone, seen what it can do, and maybe we're seeing, maybe Tony's on the cutting edge of a new look at TV coming back a little bit to serialized, or at least exploring. Oh, serialized things are more interesting. And we have distinct chunks of a TV show. It used to be every episode was a specific monster, and everything tied up in the end. That was a very conventional TV trope early on. And so maybe it's coming back to that a little bit. And Tony's exploring that. It's going to make that interesting. So that, yeah, what you said is very possible. It could be really interesting. So, yeah, I think that's fun. Possibly, you know, maybe gives me some hope for that thing. Doug, did you want to say anything else about what you're thinking about next season?
Necessarily, but I did want to kind of add on a little bit. Like, I'm definitely, I don't know, not so much concerned about the demise of Luthen as much as curious, because I'm not the most hardcore Star Wars fan in existence, but I really don't ever remember hearing his name outside of this series. Like, none of the original, like, trilogy, nobody ever mentioned the name Luthen or him in any sort of context as to, oh, that's the guy that, you know, founded the resistance through his sacrifice. He's not a famous person. So they have to kill him off.
Yeah.
But they have to do it in a certain way. They have to do it in a heroic way, I feel like. Like, he has to make a sacrifice or something for the rebellion. But they have to do it in a way that he's not known for it. Like, it's a quiet sacrifice. He doesn't get famous for how he died.
I think you could. I think you could go the other direction. I think you could be, you could get more backstory of his motivations, and you could find that his motivations are more selfish and more spiteful, maybe. And his ultimate, like, end becomes almost detrimental to, like, you know, good outcomes. You could see a lot, because we don't know his backstory. We don't really know much. And so
you just want to turn a hero, even a flawed hero as he is, you want to turn him into a villain for what purpose?
Well, I would not call him a hero. What does the show
gain by turning him into an outright villain? Like, haha, I was in it for the money all along, bitches.
No, but we don't know what he's in it for.
You're right. We don't know. He could be a complete jerk in the end. I get that. I don't want that. I think that would be a horrible place to go with his character. He is a guy that we are compelled to, that we follow as a leader, that we look up to as a founder of the rebellion.
I would not choose him as a leader at all, dude. He seems...
He gets it done.
He's willing to sacrifice lots of innocent dudes, and he doesn't
get
give a
the
shit.
Job done.
He's willing to crack eggs, sure, but, like, I don't want to be one of those eggs, you know?
Sure, yeah, but let me ask this. Who wins? The rebels or the Empire? We know what happens. Who wins?
Let me throw this out there. Maybe they don't necessarily have to kill Luthen off. The other thing that he could do, they could write his character off. He could sacrifice himself and fade into obscurity, sort of like how Obi-Wan went and hid on Tatooine. I mean, he's still in the story. He still exists in the universe, but he's very much a background character. So either way, I feel like Luthen has to be removed from the larger story just because he doesn't show up later. Whether or not that's through his death or through a sacrifice or through, you know, him, you know, maybe he gets disgraced and he has to go into hiding, you know, whatever that is, I'm probably not going to like it just because his character's so great.
Yeah, well, the only thing I really do want to see is more of his backstory, like more of his motivation, because, yeah, he's mysterious. And
he'll turn into a villain.
No, but I think that would fit, because he's not a good dude. He's not a good guy. He's not really out for the benefit of people. He's really in it to see things burn. It seems like he's in it to he's a chaos agent. He's really the chaos dude who wants, I think altruistically, maybe you could say he sees the crawl of the Empire. He sees that as a real problem, and that's his motivation. But it could be just he just wants to see things burn. He wants to, like, reset, you know. I don't necessarily think that's a great aspect, character aspect, but we'll see, you know.
You don't want to see Star Wars Nick Fury, like, become like an agent of Hydra. Come on, man. He can be good. He can be flawed and still good. That's what makes him compelling. That's why I love him.
Yeah,
he's flawed and good now, right? I mean, he doesn't have to become that. That's what he is right now.
Yeah, we could just stay with that. I'm good with it.
Yeah.
We have to learn more about why he wants to see it all burn. I'm fine with just hating the Empire. It's fine to hate Nazis, Nuge.
That's true.
Yes. And you talk about good and evil, and I think this show has shown that they're not the simple things that we think of as good and evil. We have had four major set pieces, climactic moments in this show. We've had Ferrix sort of running from the law type arc with a major battle at the end, and then coming back to the funeral with Marva and sort of a rebellious spark happening. We had Aldani, which was a classic heist with some downtrodden group of, you know, go-getters, you know, barely surviving in this crazy situation. We had Narkeena 5, which was a prison break from this, like, dystopian, crazy prison. And then, so there was 190 speaking parts in the show. It takes place over a five-year period before episode 4. Well, the show overall will. And the Battle of Yavin, when the Galactic Civil War begins, we see on the ground level of the Empire, the regular people, the rebel instigators. So what is something and or does that you really like or other Star Wars shows, movies haven't been doing? Overall, I guess, overall thoughts and review of the series. What do you guys? Let's start with Scott.
That was like... You were like 85% of the way to a good segue. Like,
yeah.
That was fantastic.
I tried. Really,
I love the initiative there. Good work.
And then you just threw the ball right in the dirt.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a secret. I loved this show. I think it's one of my favorite shows in the last 5 years, 10 years. The show is amazing. I've always been a huge fan of the Star Wars universe. The idea of the Jedi and the Sith and the space battles and the Senate and all of that stuff is always super interesting to me. Don't care about the characters as much. I'm not into Luke and Chewie and the Millennium Falcon. I mean, those are cool. Don't get me wrong. That's just not why I tune into Star Wars. So being able to watch this show and see them explore so much more of that universe that I really enjoy and see the other sides of it, to see the Senate, to see, you know, the rise of the Empire as a malevolent force. You know, you never really see what the Empire does and why people don't like them. So to see that portrayed at all is great. To see it portrayed so well is even better. So I love the storytelling in this because it's exactly what I wanted in a show. It's more Star Wars world building, but it's done in an adult way, in a political intrigue kind of way that's going to keep me interested. Now, I get it that maybe it doesn't appeal to the biggest audience, but it definitely appeals to me. So I loved this series start to finish. It was about as perfect of a Star Wars show as I could have asked for. Now, was every episode flawless? Clearly not. But I don't think that there's a whole lot you could have done to make this a better show that I would have liked more, just because it was just everything about this, from the characters to the storytelling to the sets to the, it just, everything was great. I loved all of it. So if I had to give a review of this series, you know, if I had to give this series a score on a scale of 1 to 10, 9.5, baby. Sign me up. I will be there day one for season 2. I'll be there day one for anything Tony Gilroy puts out in the future, man. If he wants to come out with a Gummy Bears live action, dude, I'm there. Sign me up. I don't care what it is, because the guy knows how to tell a story.
Did you watch Michael Clayton, Scott?
That was, yeah. So as part of my foray into the world of Andor, I went back and watched both Devil's Advocate, which I've always liked. I didn't realize it was Tony Gilroy at the time, but I mean, I've liked that movie from a long time ago. And I also did watch Michael Clayton. And yeah, Michael Clayton feels like Andor, not in a Star Wars universe, right? I mean, it's a lot of the same story beats. It's a lot of the same storytelling. It's a lot of more of fleshing out these flawed characters. You know, that one just happens to be, about a lawyer who gets wrapped up in some stuff instead of, you know, about some, you know, guys in the Star Wars universe. So yes, absolutely. I like pretty much everything Tony Gilroy's done, at least thus far of what I've seen.
Yeah, I watched Michael Clayton. I was curious because you said something online about it, and it didn't seem like you were really into it or something. But I think maybe you were just like halfway through. But like, yeah, I watched it again recently, and I was like kind of thinking, I think I was like 16. No, I was like, I don't know. I was really young when I saw this. Saw it first in the theaters, and I remember loving it. But it had been a while, and I watched it again, and man, dude, it holds up so well. It's got that kind of intrigue factor, and it's got like really weirdly dark scenes and relationships or like people doing weird things, but in a very realistic way. Like you think you almost feel like a voyeur in this world, and it's similar to Andor. You almost feel like guilty about looking in on this window of these people because they feel so real. I guess that's where I would draw the connection. But yeah, Doug, what do you think of the series as an overall? What would you rate it?
I think I don't want to just completely echo what Baker was saying, but there are similarities there. I loved that it was deeper dive into, you know, the world and the franchise that I grew up with. Star Wars. I mean, I remember, you know, running around with a cardboard tube, playing like I had a lightsaber, just beating up my sister when I was a kid. That was my childhood. I grew up with that, the action figures, you know, seeing the different media as it came out, watching the different series, following the different shows, all the spinoffs. This was unique. It was probably one of the most serious adult things I've ever seen them do with the Star Wars franchise. And it was fun. It was fun that it appealed to me as an adult. Yeah, it was slower paced at times, but it was worth it, in my opinion. I can see why that wouldn't appeal to a broader audience per se, but I liked that they did it. It wasn't flawless. As nice as we were to the show throughout our podcast, there were some issues along the way. Tony Gilroy, definitely a good writer. Dan Gilroy, maybe he's definitely a writer. And I could say a lot of positive stuff about the show, certainly vastly more positive than I could negative. And at the end of the day, the negative would just be nitpicking details that I didn't particularly care for. Overall, the whole concept and foundation of the show I thought was brilliant. So I give it a strong 8.5 out of 10. I'm really looking forward to season 2 and maybe a little nervous that they're going to screw some stuff up, but more hopeful that they'll finish strong and we'll get a great story and a great lead into Rogue One.
Yeah, that's fair. The only thing I will say at the, like, my ending thoughts is the final episode with Marva's funeral is one of, if not the most powerful scenes in any show ever that I've seen. It may be due just all the buildup, the characters leading up to that point, or just maybe the impact of that scene. Just is going to have a lasting impression on me forever. A little funny thing I think the show has like kind of shown me, I guess, is smiling. I've never been so focused on and impacted by characters smiling in a TV show, like especially Luthen, I guess. People barely smile in the show, so like when it happens, it feels special. Specifically when Mon Mothma and Take Holman are having like that tense conversation, kind of feeling each other out in their politics, and then Mon Mothma comes back with the same statement. She says, "Or perhaps my politics are too strong for your tastes." And he smiles there, and the tension is kind of lifted a little bit, and it just, you know, it has a great impact. When Luthen has a bit of a smile, seeing Marva's funeral speech, and the people of Ferrix start to break out in riots, you see him smile a little, and that kind of gives you so much information. It did for me. It just said, like, well, he feels like maybe his plans are working, or like at least he's witnessing some what he's wanting to achieve. And at the end, when Luthen is given the choice to kill Cassian, you can see some relief on his face. This is you see Cassian's face very tense, and then he relaxes at that moment, and he breaks a smile a little bit there, and that tells you so much about what happens. Like, obviously we know what happens, but that tells you. It gives you so much in the moment. So smiling, I think, has been used in this series so well. I think there was one other thing that I forgot about. But yeah, basically, like, the idea that I actually like Star Wars now again, or at least I want to see more Star Wars, is really weird to me. Like, when the prequels came out, it was just like white noise. I really wanted to love them. I was younger and I really wanted to like them, and I think I really did like the first one a bit, but then second and third one came out and I just kind of felt nothing. And then as I like kind of reflected on them or rewatched them, I realized how shitty the state that it was in. And then the sequels came out, and you know, there was a little spark of hope there with the first one. But I realized, well, it's obvious, it's just a kind of cash grab. It's an obvious replay of New Hope. And I was willing to like enjoy them as what they were, which was popcorn-y sci-fi action movies, you know, J.J. Abrams style, you know. But like Star Wars was not a component of them that I was interested in. It were just kind of fun movies. Rogue One was a drag. and then I pretty much avoided all the other movies. So been a while since I've actually been wanting to see real Star Wars, you know, what they can do with Star Wars. And so this show bringing that to me is special. It's very special. I probably haven't fully come to terms with that, but we shall see what happens. 10 out of 10. That's my score for this show.
Can I just want to say that I'm really happy that we are in the world of streaming, because a show like this, or a show like any of the Star Wars shows when we were kids or even 10 years ago, would not have been possible, right? This could not have been a movie, right? It would have been too dense to put into a movie, and it absolutely could not, they never would have put this on, you know, on linear television, right? The only way that Andor happens is because streaming exists, and because the paradigm has shifted, and you don't have to fill time slots, and you don't have to, you know, cut it down to a 2.5 hour movie. So the fact that we're living in that has really opened up creatively the floodgates of a lot of new and interesting types of shows and movies and content, right? You know, like,
yeah.
We were talking about the DuckTales. DuckTales, of all things, got a reboot, man. That never would have happened, you know, 20 years ago. Nobody was rebooting a cartoon from the 40s, right? The only reason that happens is because you have this wider audience. You have more eyes on this thing. So you have the ability to be more creative with your content and maybe appeal to a lesser audience. You don't have to, not every show has to be Big Bang Theory that appeals to, you know, 800,000 million people, right? So you can have these kind of niche shows that we wouldn't have been able to have. So the fact that we have this is fantastic. The fact that Tony Gilroy came in and he did the show and he showed so much respect for the world and for the material, right? I mean, he didn't just, you know, throw the tropes from Star Wars on screen and call it a day and cash the check. Like, I kind of feel like this was a love letter. He knows what he's doing. He knows what's interesting about Star Wars, and he did it really well.
Well, I kind of feel like he's just kind of doing his thing. It, you know, he's just, I feel like he's just, it's another day on the job for him. Honestly, I don't think he like really had like a passion for this, but just to see like a really good writer do this. Yeah. I mean, it's really impactful. I think it will be impactful, at least with insider industry people. I think artists, and, you know, I've seen a lot of critics critical rave, you know, think pieces about the show and say like, oh, this is what Star Wars. I didn't mention those in the beginning. You know, I cherry picked a little bit at the beginning. There are good articles about it, but yeah. The other thing I want to shout out before we end this is the music. That's probably one of my favorite aspects of the show is just the creativity of the music, the intro music evolving and changing and then becoming the final scene of the whole series. I mean, that is awesome. So I got to fit that in there. Where are we at? Anybody else have anything else to say?
I'll give it scores, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, sorry, let me review. So you or Scott, you gave it 9.5.
I did.
And Doug, what was your score?
8.5.
8.5. Okay. Mine was 10, which was the correct one. yeah. So if there is no more comments, I have to say logic gate out.
Go watch some more of Tony Gilroy's Library. Everything's great.
I appreciate that you went back to the robot voice for that.
I tried. Thing. I don't even know what you're talking about, but I tried. All right.
Excellent.
So we are going to watch Rogue One now, and the next we will do another episode in between whenever the next season of Andor comes out, hopefully soon, but don't hold us to that. We will watch Rogue One and do an episode on that. I will be forced to watch it again and reckon with what I've just witnessed in Andor and, you know, integrate that into my feelings towards Rogue One, which will be interesting.
You hated Rogue One when it came out, right?
Yeah.
Very frustrated with it. And I think, Doug, you liked it when it came out, because I think we both talked about how good it was, right?
If we're dropping a teaser for our next episode, everyone be sure to tune in to listen to the mental gymnastics on display from Jason to explain why suddenly what he hated before is not so bad.
I am so looking forward to listening to Jason backtrack.
I just imagine myself like in the Pitfall game on Atari, just like trying to survive this journey. Yeah, because like, I don't know. There's no way this movie is good. There's just no way, but like maybe. We'll see.
Yeah.
So
be sure to tune in.
Okay. On the next time on Logic Gate Podcast, you can contact us at logicgatefans@gmail.com. Wait, I don't have a sign out now. Okay,
next. Out.
Well, we did that already.
You'll have to get creative in your editing.
Okay, catch us next time on Logic Gate reviewing the movie Rogue One. Bye. That's fine. I'll cut that. I'll make it sound fine.
Oh, gosh.